Welcome to Climate Talk Uganda. I'm Josephine Karunji. In these past 7 days, we've been marking Mental Health Week. In this episode, it seems like an opportune moment to think about the connections between climate change and mental health. And like most things related to climate change and its impacts, the picture is pretty complicated when it comes down to it. There's a lot to explore, and we're going to start with this episode in which we're talking to Janet Kantalama. She's a psychologist and the founder of Safe Places, which she told me is a private mental, neurological, and addiction treatment center. I asked her first to explain to me the relationship, as she sees it, between mental health and climate change.
So a mental health person is a well-being, psychological well-being of an individual that helps them navigate everyday stresses of their lives, that helps them become productive in their individual capacity, but to the community they live with as well. So a person should be psychologically well, be able to manage their stresses, be able to offer, you know, be productive. Okay, so now here's a person. We know where there's climate change, and climate change comes with changes in the atmospheric environment, isn't it? It comes with changes for example, if it's sunshine, you'll see there will be heat waves. There will be heat waves on the extreme and then floods on the extreme. You know, there will be changes that come with the elements of the weather, isn't it? So I will just give you a simple example. When you go to downtown on a very hot day, let's be realistic.
Even when it's not a very hot day, it's already.
So it might not be in a very hot day. So now you go to downtown, Josephine, on a very hot day, and I'm not saying in your SC, in your car, which is that one, which is fitted with SC. Walk there. Go do what you have to do. Come back up. Even when you're still there, you'll see that at one point you don't care if you're stepping on someone's toe or if you're shouting at someone or if you're, you know. So the environment affects the way you're feeling. It affects your well-being. It affects the way you're thinking. If, for example, you stood in very hot sun for a whole day, you can even actually physically faint, but that is the physical being. But now, your quality of thoughts, your quality of emotional well-being, and the way it will be exhibited in the way you behave. So if we look back to maybe was it January, February, that period where people were not sleeping, okay? So look at it that you've had a very long day. The time you're meant to sleep at night, you can't also not sleep. So your physiological functioning of sleep has been disrupted. So you wake up the next day with very poor quality sleep. You go into your workplace, interface with this very nice supervisor of yours, nice meaning very supervisor where they're result oriented, repeat, same cycle. So you see how you burn out, you get overly stressed, you're unable to manage your stress, get into burnout, get into anxiety because you're not performing, your productivity has reduced, that you're not having that quality of sleep, you're not having quality of feeding, you're not having quality of relationships, because it is all affected by the just climate, by the environment that you're in. So I'll also ask another thing, that sometimes when you leave that very, you know, that heat wave we had, right? And they call you out to go have a gathering. So you remember you have that fatigue. It's literally hot. And it was cross-cutting, you know? Literally hot. You will just literally want to go to your home
yes.
And then, so your social connections are also being affected. For your well-being, for your mental well-being, you need some basic functioning, physiological functioning. You need to be able to sleep well. You need to be able to eat well. You need to be able to have quality thoughts, quality emotions. You need to be able to rest so that you can be able to function very well. So that is only one extreme example. I've given you the heat. Now go to the floods. So there are things like they killed 7. So what is happening to the well-being of the families of the people that have been lost into that. You, what is happening to you when you're going through a previously unflooded road with your car? Are you anxious?
And you have your child in the car on your way to school.
Thank you very much. Do you feel some level of psychological distress or discomfort? Okay. So what if you're the farmer who planted their seasons of growing crops? You encounter both seasons. And that was your hope for you to get school fees. When it floods, when it is out of your season or your range, there'll be effects on your crops. When it's on the other side, there'll be, and then this is something that is your sustenance. That is your, you know, thing you're relying on. Will you be okay? Will you sleep well at night and not have racing thoughts of where you're going to get school fees for your kids? So imagine if that is sustained, that now the uncertainty and the actual damages that come from climate change keep coming and keep going. Where does that leave the person? Don't you wonder sometimes when you find people who are angry? Just the day was hot and people are
everyone is irritated.
Irritated, angry, you know, short with people. There is a level of unfriendliness.
Janet, I'll tell you honestly that when we say climate change, mental health is the last thing that comes to my mind. But do you think we are taking it as seriously as we should, our government?
So I'll start from the mental health itself, even without the climate change. Are we taking the mental health and wellness or well-being of us as a government seriously? I think we can do better.
As a government, as a population?
As a government, we can do better. As a population, with awareness, I believe we will get there. So there is work to do for a population to take it seriously. That is mental health. Now, on the other hand, mental health and climate change, there is a lot more work to do on both parties, the government as well as the population.
What does that work look like for government?
It looks like policy. It looks like a national agenda. It looks like systems and practices put in place, you know, to help curb the climate change and its effects, as well as bring about the integration and awareness of the integration of how one affects the other. You know, not just awareness about climate change, but how actually, literally, one affects the other. So if you find that the population is no longer tolerant, there are very many factors that could lead to that. But if I can ask that if people were to do actual wellness studies and, you know, for the population, and they could time seasons, as we know how it manifests in the climate change, and they could time and look at it, you could find that, yes, all these other factors are prevailing, but during the seasons where there are extreme changes that were not there before, yeah? Because you know that people would tell you comfortably that this is our planting season and this is our... But now, things are not the same as they are. So if we could do proper people studies during that season, you could find that actually that the environment meaning even just the elements of weather, have a big impact on the mental well-being of the people then. So for the work that I'm looking at is that national agenda about climate change and mental health, the national agenda about mental health, I also want to be selfish about that because, you know, that is also trailing behind. So if there is that national agenda, there is effort put in, there is planning, there is policy, there is funding, there is awareness, bringing the masses onto the project, then that would be a wonderful thing.
How do I be more conscious?
Yes.
Knowing now that there's a relationship between a changing climate and my mental well-being.
So you try to, for example, when it is seasonal. I mean, like, now that you are aware, first of all, you should look for the ideal environment.
I should come to your senses.
Go to the nature. Go for the nature walks. Go to seek that environment. If you can't plant a tree at home, plant many as you can, because you're chasing the environment. You want to get that good environment, right? So, and that environment comes with protective factors for your mental health. So if you are aware, then you definitely need to work towards having a very good environment. But then also, that being said, that the change is here. And if we don't do as fast as whatever we have to do, then definitely the effects are here. So we can then protect ourselves against the effects of climate change onto our mental health. You know, that is, you know what, can we do within our powers as you, Josephine, as Janet? What can we do in our powers as a journalist and as a lawyer and a psychologist? What can we do in our powers to curb the effects of climate change? Okay? So as an individual, if it is for you to create awareness about this, then as an individual, it's for you to protect yourself. If it means taking water extremely during the period where you know that it is going to affect your mental wellness, then you do so. If it's getting into awareness that this season, that there will be maybe very too much rain, how do you plan your day so that you're not frustrated by the elements of the weather? So it is, how do you protect yourself from that? There are those we can do, and there are those we can't do. So for example, you cannot do, as Josephine, you will not say that this, I will do the drainage of this road and it doesn't flood. But you can know that when it is raining that heavily, then you have there are red spots that you know that if you pass here, I might be swept away.
Sometimes even when you know there are places that are not red spots and then they become red spots. But you know,
time.
It's just occurred to me that there are times you're watching a movie a movie and in the other countries. And there's an alert that says, do not get out of your houses today. There's a heat wave. There's, I don't know what, or there's a heat wave and people are reacting or responding like this, and there's a lot of madness going around in the city, so stay indoors. It's just occurred to me that this is some of the things that you're speaking about.
Protective. How do you protect the population against the elements or the effects of climate change onto them? If there is a storm, you know, if there is Namibia where there was the heat wave we had, the bad hot season we had, also affected most of, we are not in isolation. And they were telling people today, children will not go to school, you know, because it could even lead to physical, like, dehydration of the children. So those are some of the things I'm saying, how do we do protect against those?
Storm, you know your Kampala, work from home. no school.
So if you had a national agenda and policy, and they say, you know what, working from home is one of the options that should be in your workplace policy for extreme weather, and you just sit on your laptop and work from home. If you have the option of working from home, definitely that would be a lovely thing to do. But as you know, and our status, and we have to be alive to our facts, that might be a very difficult thing. So what else do you do? If it means giving your child that umbrella, give them that umbrella. If it means not walking the long distances you've been walking, then you're not going to do those long distances. If it means taking a break, if you have that opportunity,
do
take that break. And if you feel that it's already been compromised, that you're not in a very good headspace, then you seek for your support. If you have effects like trauma, as a result of the events arising out of climate change, then you get your support.
Janet, you're based in Kampala.
Yes.
And on the outskirts. Does this mean that we don't see these things happening in the rural areas?
Where is food grown in Kampala? Have you had farmers that have even reached levels of getting out of their known occupation because of the changes that they are going through?
You're a farmer today, tomorrow you're a fisherman.
Not even a fisherman. You've given up on life. You have tried to get out of this life in one way or another, the frustration has led you to drinking and you have become an addict, you know, as a result of frustrations. So it is not a Kampala thing. Because what you have to know is actually most people out of Kampala depend a lot on their land. And then when there is the changes in the climate, it affects their land and its production. And then that directly affects their productivity. Okay, if the livestock dies, if the crops don't grow, if the dams dry up, then that means you see a person who was depending on the crop to grow.
Yep. The entire
financial gone. Yes, financial stress will come in, which might come with domestic violence because they are expecting you to provide for home. That might come with addiction. That might come with actually triggering other mental illnesses. That might come with general psychological distress, that it is not this or the other, but it has come as a result of if someone's well-being, I mean, if someone's source of livelihood is directly affected.
Tell me at least two therapeutic approaches that are best suited for us. I'm sure it's not one size fits all from where you are in Sweden and what we have here. And maybe just two that you're seeing communities embracing,
okay,
if at all. Are we embracing what you're speaking about, or are we in denial?
We are getting there.
Okay. Eh?
We are getting there. I can tell you that when we started, when we opened the Chambogo Center in 2017, the traffic that was then would make you question. You know, that person who questioned me when I was leaving my good job?
Are you okay?
Yes. It would also make me question myself, am I okay? Because we would open and people come for malaria, say, no, we only do mental health.
What's that?
What's that? Yeah. So, but now if I can tell you that the journeys that we've moved up to now, that there you see that there is an increase in the numbers of people that are seeking their support. And so we'll take that to mean that whatever we're offering is working. Or the need has increased, the need for the services has increased, and the awareness has increased. So there can be two ways. The need, but definitely what I know for a fact is the need, because the risk factors for poor mental health, including climate change, are higher, are more. So the therapeutic approaches that we're using, you know, we often get that thing that these things are for white. But then you have to look at it, at what we're offering as mental health care. We call it biopsychosocial model, biology, psychology, social. That we look at the individual as a person. That is a treatment model, not a therapeutic model. We look at a person as an individual. What is it that is coming from within your genetic makeup, your body, that is making you sick or unwell? Can we take care of that? No? That is where a psychiatrist comes in and they do the blood works as well, and then they do diagnosis and say, what is it that is making Josephine unwell? Then we look at the psychological, that is the emotional and mental well-being, that is the cognitive and emotional and then behavior of an individual. That what is, how are you psychologically? Do you see that everything is dark, you know? Do you see things differently from the way things should be seen? When I say see, I don't mean the eyes, that do you perceive things to be differently from, you know, the way that they really are, okay? Or do you feel like there is no light at the end of the tunnel? What is it? Am I having these excessive fears and anxieties? You know, are they rooted in something? Then you look at the social. How is Josephine in social settings? Social settings means your friends, your family, your child, your workplace, your school, you know? Because one of the elements of gauging someone's mental wellness is how do they... Oh, the fourth one I didn't talk about. I spoke about a psychological well-being. I spoke about ability to manage stresses. The other one is interrelations, quality of interrelationships. And then the fourth is productivity to the individual and the community. So it's one of the 10 of the areas to gauge when you're assessing someone's mental wellness. So when I say, how is Josephine in a social setting? Because you might be the one that who doesn't have any friends. You can spend a year without talking to anyone. Are you okay? Yes, we know we're different. Say, I'm just introverted, but are you?
I really am introverted.
Yes, but are we okay? You just ask, Josephine, are we okay? Just let's be sure we are. We are okay. So that is the overall treatment model. And I believe that that is embraced because it looks at a person as a whole. It doesn't look at the person as individuals. Then the other specific approaches that we use, we usually use a lot of talk therapy in different forms, cognitive behavioral therapy, DBT, those are other ones, EMDR, but there is a lot of...
Acronyms, Jen.
Sorry. So talk therapy has other, you know, it's generally conversation, okay? Mm. And I believe that it is not alien because as Uganda and as Africans... we are social, conversational well-being. We even used to have therapy in that context, but we didn't know it was therapy. When Josephine, I don't think you went to the well. We've already established
that. I did go to the well. I did, and I would carry 2 jerry cans.
We've already established that. So when we went to the well, when you went with your sister and your cousins to the well, they usually stopped somewhere and had conversations.
What we call gossip.
You might call it gossip, but they're conversations. These are gossip conversations. And so if they annoyed you at home, that is the time you come and say...
let it out.
Mm-hmm.
Janet, if you could... click your fingers and make 3 things happen. What would they be?
Government buy-in. Awareness. Like major time awareness. Then investment into mental health and climate change.
Thank you, Janet, for making the time. Please close this podcast.
So thank you so much for hosting me, Josephine. I've enjoyed my time here. I think just my last word is actually, when we see people knocking people and people pushing people, it's not that people have bad manners.
People pulling out guns and just
people
shooting.
People pulling out guns and pushing and whatever. You know, when we see people who have been affected by these floods, let us not detach ourselves so far from those people as well, because they are going through something. When you see your colleague that there has been changes in a life that they, you know, they were not in that life before and now they're in a different life. And in case it shows off, I mean, there are telltale signs. The thing would be kindness. Kindness and support to the person instead of condemnation and maybe, you know, castigating and blaming and, you know. Yep. So I think it is the kindness that I'm asking for people, that let us be kind to each other. Let us support each other. If your person needs support, get them the professional help that they need. And then let us look after our environment.
Janet Kantalama is a Kampala-based psychologist and she's the founder of Safe Places, a mental health and addiction treatment center. If you'd like to find out more, you can go to our show notes. And remember, we depend on you, our listeners, for support. So if you like what we're doing and want to hear more, leave us a review and recommend us to your friends. And with that, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.